Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of this nation's finest leaders said of leadership that having a vision is not enough. Change comes through turning a vision into a reality. It is easy to espouse worthy goals, values and policies. The hard part is the implementation. Tragically, 10 years ago, the architect of those words, Sir Peter Blake, lost his life in the pursuit of turning his vision into a reality. The essence of the Blake ethos centred around the notion that it's your actions that define you, not your words. Something that can be easily forgotten by those well-intentioned in their pursuit of public service. Mr. Speaker, I raise this because in 2008, as a recipient of a Sir Peter Blake Leadership Award, I had cause to reflect on my own journey, the importance of leadership, and the visions that I wanted to see become realities. That moment was a turning point, Mr. Speaker, and much of the reason that I'm here today, something I'll expand on shortly. But firstly, Mr. Speaker, can I acknowledge you for your re-nomination and the dignity and decorum you bring to this role? Can I acknowledge the Prime Minister and Ministers of the Crown for the tremendous social and economic leadership that you have and will continue to show this nation, and express how humbled and privileged that I feel to become part of this National Caucus team, working to serve the positive aspirations of all New Zealanders. Mr. Speaker, can I also acknowledge our Party President, Peter Goodfellow, the National Party Board that he leads, and the team from the Service Centre. I want to sincerely thank you all for the assistance you have provided me, and acknowledge the outstanding leadership and support you provide our party. In particular, Mr. Speaker, can I thank Grant McCallum, who is also my campaign chair. Also want to pay tribute, Mr. Speaker, to my electorate team in Northland. Our success in the election is just that, our success. Nothing could have been achieved without you. And while I am the net result of those efforts in my election as MP, I want you to know that this has and always will be a team effort. Mr. Speaker, I want to especially make mention of Sally McCauley, our electorate chair, the longest serving in the party, Neil Clements, my deputy chair, a very wise political gentleman, Ross Miller, a loyal and guiding hand, and a special thanks to the evergreen June Levitt, the Mrs. National Party of the North. At this stage, Mr. Speaker, I'd also like to pay tribute to my predecessor, the Honourable John Carter, for the massive contribution that he made this party, to Northland and this nation. Of course, massive contribution could also describe the tab that he now has at Trader Jack's, but I'm sure the cooks will be well served with him as the High Commissioner. Not only for the passion that he brings to make a difference, but also for the range of new jokes he'll be unleashing on an unsuspecting population. Mr. Speaker, I want to offer my thanks to all Northlanders who supported me through the campaign and who have entrusted in me to be their representative. I owe you all a debt of gratitude, and I hope to repay this in kind by being as effective as I can be as your MP in representing the hopes and positive aspirations of Northland and our region. Lastly, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank my family. My wonderful parents, siblings and children. I am who I am because of you, and I couldn't be more proud to be a part of the family that we are. Also, I want to make a special thanks to my partner, Sandra. I've not always been lucky in love, Mr. Speaker, but my Powerball number certainly came up in that particular lottery when Sandra came into my life. Thank you very much, Sandra, for sharing my life with me in the way that you do. Mr. Speaker, I now like to share with you three important themes: who I am, what I believe in, and why I'm here. I'm the eldest son of Lou and Merlin Sabin with one brother and sister. I'm the proud father of three amazing children. As you can see, these family things do get to me, Mr. Speaker. Three amazing children, Brooke, Daryl and Brenna. I'm of mixed genealogy like most, and I'm proudly of Tainui Whakapapa on my mother's side. It gives me a uniqueness in this world, and I celebrate that, but I celebrate more that I'm a New Zealander and I call this place my home. My early years were spent in Auckland before we as family moved to Whangarei, and I'm a product of Whangarei Boys High School. I left school and followed my father's footsteps into the Navy as a seaman officer, but before long I found myself back in Northland dairy farming. However, as a young father, I was keen to join the police. essentially to contribute to making the community I was bringing my children up in a better place. With that in mind, my policing career was soon focused in the area of drug enforcement, primarily because I felt the best way to make a difference was to get to the cause of the problem. One quickly comes to the conclusion in that particular vocation that alcohol and drug abuse is the cause more often than not. My career in the police shadowed the introduction of pure methamphetamine, or P, into New Zealand, an area I developed an expertise in, but while working on squads running undercover and electronic surveillance operations, I literally saw New Zealand explode from having no P problem to the worst in the world within 5 years. Our well-developed drug culture was saw us primed for the only hard drug in the world that you can make on your kitchen bench from readily available retail chemicals. Those 5 years have changed New Zealand forever, Mr. Speaker, and led me to the conclusion that the fight needed to go back to the top of the cliff. Quite simply, Mr. Speaker, I came to the conclusion that we wouldn't win the war trying to heal the wounded. This desire to find a better way gave rise to Methcon Group, a drug education and policy company that I founded in 2006 and operated from then. The mission was simple: empower employees, students and community with education while working to find policy solutions to help provide government with better tools. It was a long, difficult and often lonely journey, Mr. Speaker, one that many told me was futile, one that many told me was someone else's problem to fix. Nevertheless, I stuck to the task at hand, the primary reason being that I just believed that someone needed to do something. Can I at this time pay tribute to the Prime Minister and acknowledge the outstanding leadership in this particular issue? It has indeed been a game breaker. That challenge was put into chilling context, however, when on Anzac Day 2009, my fight went from P to that of my son's survival when he suffered a catastrophic bleed on the brain during a game of rugby. This could get tough, Mr. Speaker. Following emergency service surgery, I was confronted with the news that his death was imminent, something I refused to accept, as well as the contention that if he did survive, it would likely be in a vegetative state. Like his old man, my boy's a fighter. I knew that, even if they didn't. And I pledged to fight with him to help get his life back. It was a frightening journey, full of heartache, but one in which we never lost hope. Sometimes, Mr. Speaker, hope is the only thing you have to cling to. When that's the case, you just have to develop an iron grip. Something I'm very proud to say, Mr. Speaker, we've been rewarded for today, as my son sits in the gallery, larger than life, fit and healthy, to watch proceedings today. More water, thank you. That taught me, Mr. Speaker, that it's not what happens in life that defines you, it's what you do about it. It was a difficult couple of years, but by now my goal was to enter politics, and I sold my business to allow for a full-time campaign in an endeavour to try and win this election and the election that followed. Mr. Speaker, while there's some who would say that I'm a one-trick pony here to further the anti-drug cause, far from it, my journey into politics has come about as an evolution of many professional and life experiences, leading me to the simple conclusion that if one wants to support their community in achieving its real potential, there is a need for one to be around the tables where the decisions that are most affecting your communities are being made. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, my efforts in the P issue demonstrate more my willingness to try and make a difference than my focus on that one issue alone. Much like my son, I just wanted to try and find solutions, while many others were finding ways to tolerate the symptoms. I'd now like to share with you a little bit on what I believe in. I'm a proud representative of the New Zealand National Party because its founding values resonate with who I am as an individual. Central to this, personal responsibility, reward for hard work and enterprise, limited government, and equality of opportunity and citizenship. Mr. Speaker, it's a fast-paced world we live in, and much has changed even in my lifetime with regard to the fabric that binds the society together and the balance required to maintain a healthy socio-economic equilibrium. Too often, in my view, A sense of pride, self-reliance and independence is usurped by a culture of entitlement. Despite the implicit irony that so many that contribute nothing to society have developed an almost self-righteous belief that society owes them something. Striving to succeed and success itself is so often frowned upon as threatening and somehow discriminating against those who seek refuge behind the ever-growing veil of mediocrity. Participation, it seems, Mr. Speaker, is now the goal, and winning is equal part unnecessary and intimidatory. Personal responsibility, the very source from which self-respect itself springs, is intrinsically related to the individual's willingness to accept responsibility over one's life. To do so is to give value, purpose, and freedom to the soul. To refuse it leaves a hole in the spirit from which the individual will slowly but surely drain. Yet years of socialist ideology, welfareism, which has evolved to provide perverse incentives to opt out, and the insidious encroachment of government into the minds and lives of citizens, has seen the notion of personal responsibility pilloried like it were the ramblings of capitalist zealots. This country is God's own, yet we condemn many children to child abuse, neglect and homicide. For a generation, we have vainly sought solutions, largely ignoring the fact that what we have created is a culture in which it's too easy for parents to become trapped in welfare, often through no fault of their own, who lack even the most basic of life skills, and for whom personal responsibility is an unnecessary and irrelevant commodity, surpassed by the sea of social agencies that will now seek to provide what they will now never have to. Mr. Speaker, too often we become consumed with addressing the symptoms of these very problems, while failing to challenge the cause of them, something that often requires courage and honesty in uncomfortable amounts, but nonetheless something, in my view, that New Zealand expects of its leaders. To that end, I'd like to commend the work being done by the Minister of Social Development in this particular area. Mr. Speaker, the long and short of it is, a little bit of personal responsibility will go a long way, but the lack thereof will go a lot further, just in the wrong direction. And why am I here? I'm a great believer that a marriage of quality education and equality of opportunity are the essential building blocks to social well-being and prosperity. Mr. Speaker, I'm here because I want to do all I can to ensure that this environment exists to help Northland and New Zealand reach the obvious potential that we hold. I also come here with a focus to see Northland develop a whole-of-region economic plan that clearly outlines a path to reaching that potential, the barriers that may stand in the way, and the opportunities that we have to make our boat go faster, and there are many. Too often, Mr. Speaker, Northland is singled out for all the wrong reasons, but let me make it quite clear to you today. These less than flattering statistics are not the failure. Our failure is that Northland is blessed with economic potential, but we have no plan to achieve it. Not yet, anyway. On that note, Mr. Speaker, can I suggest that if any members of the House are looking for some good beachside property in Northland, that they may pay to get in quick. Mr. Speaker, the last point I want to make relates to judgment. As elected representatives, one of our primary roles, in my view, is the exercise of judgment. Edmund Burke, viewed by many as the philosophical founder of modern conservatism, said of judgment, "Your representative owes you not his industry only, but his judgment, and he betrays instead of serving you if he sacrifices it to your opinion." In a world that is overmanaged and underled, Mr. Speaker, leadership and judgment is what New Zealanders need and expect of us, something I will always keep top of mind. So in conclusion, Mr. Speaker, who am I? I'm a proud father of a blended family of six, richer in spirit for the good and bad experiences of my personal life, poorer financially for the fact that I've managed to amass six children somehow in the process. I'm a passionate Northlander. I'm passionate about Northland and New Zealand and the pursuit of the potential therein. What do I believe in? That personal responsibility is just that, the responsibility of the person, not the government. That carrots work better than sticks, but both are necessary. That the first question we should be asking New Zealanders is, what is your dream? And then set about creating a social and economic environment to help make those dreams possible. And why am I here, Mr. Speaker? I'm here for the implementation. Quite simply, I want to help turn visions into realities. Thank you.